Okay, good morning and welcome. It is Thursday, September 22nd, 11 a.m. Pacific time, and we're here for an introduction to nonviolent communication with a special focus on relationships and families. And I'm really excited to be here with you. So I'd like to do a quick sound check. Press 5 on your phone keypad if you can hear me. Just want to double check, make sure that we are connecting. Okay, perfect. At least one person can hear me. That's wonderful. Okay, great. Thanks for the confirmation. So I know that my voice is getting through. I'm going to start with a little reading just to kind of set the tone, and then I'll tell you what our flight plan for the class is, go over a little housekeeping, and then we'll dive right in. This is a poem by Leah Pearlman, and it's called Can You Love the One Who? There's one in you who's sweet. There's one in you who's mean. Can you love them both? Can you let them both be seen? Can you love the one who tries and love her when she fails? Can you love the one who lies and love the one who wails? Can you love your tears? Love your worry? Can you love your darkest fears? Can you love your fury? Can you love indifference? Love the one who clings? Can you love the vibrant one? Love the one who sings? Can you love your addict? Can you love your thief? Can you love your vanity? Can you love your grief? Can you love your inner child and your body as you age? Can you love your wild side, release her from her cage? Can you love the one fulfilled and the one who's not? Can you love the one who's chilled and whose temper's hot? Can you love the weakling, the one who's sometimes sick? Can you love the warrior who fights through thin and thick? Can you love your crazy? Can you love your sane? Can you love your foolish heart? Love your scattered brain? There's one in you who's bored, and one who's often stressed. Can you love them both at once, and she who tries her best? If the answer's no to some of the above, then can you love the one in you who's learning how to love? That was by Leah Pearlman. Can you love the one who? And as a friend of mine once told me, don't marginalize any aspect of your being. Give them all a green light and allow them to be there. And how do we create that peacefulness among all those parts of ourselves? So it's 3 minutes after 11. Let me tell you the flight plan roughly for the class. I'm planning to speak for about 40 or 45 minutes, and then open it up to question and answer. That said, I'm actually really open to engaging much much sooner than that. And if you already have questions or comments, I welcome those. The way that it's going to work here on this class is press 1 on your phone keypad will tell me that you have a question or a comment, and then I can unmute your line. By the way, I am keeping all the lines muted right now to preserve the quality of the recording for future possibilities. So that's it for housekeeping. We'll go until 12 noon Pacific, and if you have a question or a comment at any point, and especially when I open it up to Q&A, go ahead and press 1 on your phone keypad. Speaking of which, if you consider yourself advanced in nonviolent communication, you consider yourself maybe not an expert, but perhaps an expert, but advanced, and especially if you're already teaching this, go ahead and press 5 on your phone keypad. I'd just like to do a little participant poll here, see who's with us. Press 5 if you consider yourself advanced. Press 4 if you consider yourself like intermediate, you know, you've been doing this for a bit and you understand it, but you're not a beginner, but you don't consider yourself advanced. This is totally subjective, but just want to get a good sense of where people see their skill level here on this class. So if you consider yourself a beginner, you're not totally brand new, but you still consider yourself a beginner, go ahead and press 3. And press 2 if you're a complete beginner, totally brand new. You can press 2. Okay, so one person didn't press anything, and that's fine. We have 42% of the people on the call consider themselves beginner but not brand new. And it's split roughly 14% consider themselves advanced and 14% intermediate. So that's fine. Most of my classes are all levels, so this will be no different. If you consider yourself advanced and are already teaching this material, then part of the usefulness of today's classes, it may be review, or it may give you other ideas for how to articulate different aspects of the model. So I want to start a little bit with the name, nonviolent communication, talk a little bit about the history, and talk about the purpose of it before we go much deeper. So it was called nonviolent communication because the man who created it, Marshall Rosenberg, wanted to align himself with Gandhi's movement of nonviolence. And one factor these days is that increasing numbers of people are losing connection with the historical significance of Gandhi's movement. I've taught this material in high schools where some students are brave enough to admit they've never even heard of Gandhi. So now, unfortunately, nonviolent communication doesn't tell us what it is. It tells us what it's not. And I actually overheard somebody at a store holding Marshall's book saying something like, well, that must be for violent people, so it's not for me. So just to be clear, during Gandhi's time in India, they were using certain words that had no direct translation into English. So one of those words is satyagraha, and the other word is ahimsa. And this starts to give us a little bit of the flavor of nonviolent communication. Satyagraha, again, no direct translation into English, roughly translates into soul truth, soul force, or the power of the truth. That's one aspect, the power of the truth and truth-telling, saying things like they are just because they're true. The other word, ahimsa, roughly translates into I am not your enemy, or like a sense of harmlessness toward all beings. It's a little bit akin to the Buddhist concept of loving kindness. So what we did in the English language, and the same thing happened in Spanish, is we took these two concepts of the power of the truth and loving kindness toward all beings, and we translated it into nonviolence. So that's where it comes from originally. And that can be useful because it reminds us that really what we're talking about is truth-telling and compassion. So it's also known as compassionate communication, empathic communication, empowered communication. It has so many names. Life-connected, life-serving communication. One of the names that you'll hear every now and then is this idea of giraffe language. Giraffe as in the animal with a long neck. And we use these metaphors in nonviolent communication that are a little bit dangerous, the metaphor of the giraffe and the jackal. And they're dangerous when we take them too seriously or we treat them in a way that's static and we start believing that there are people who are giraffes and people who are jackals, and then we're back in the type of thinking that reinforces disconnection. So let me clarify what these metaphors are, how they work a little bit. The metaphor of the giraffe, and again, these are our human-centered projections. They don't have anything to do with the real animals out there in the natural world. They're just our metaphors. So the metaphor of the giraffe is that it's one of the land animals with the largest heart. So its height gives it a perspective that any time we create a win-lose situation where one person wins and the other one loses, in the long run, we also lose. Because we're all interconnected, interdependent, and interrelated. You know, you reap what you sow. So anytime we create a win-lose situation, in the long run, we also lose. So the high bar here that nonviolent communication sets is to create outcomes that people refer to as win-win outcomes, where both people have the experience that they didn't have to give in to the other person, or they didn't give up on their own needs. So both people feel like they win. It's way beyond compromise. So I hear the word compromise thrown around a lot in politics, in working with children. People say, why don't you just compromise with your little brother? Or why don't you, you know, in politics we talk about compromise. When I ask people what they think of when they think of compromise, people tell me that they think of, you know, somebody gives up something, the other person gives up something, or I give in a little bit and you give in a little bit. We meet somewhere in the middle. Now, if that's as far as you can get in a conflict, that's fine, but that's not what nonviolent communication aims for. In nonviolent communication, we're aiming for a result, an outcome that both people are happy with. And I have facilitated that kind of outcome hundreds, if not thousands of times with couples, families, and larger groups and in organizations. And one of the insights that helps us get there is one of the key distinctions, which is separating needs from strategies. And this starts to get into the heart of nonviolent communication. Because when we talk about needs, we're talking about universal human needs. We're talking about the conditions necessary for life to thrive in any human being. So typically, in a live workshop, I might actually have people think about a situation that was difficult for them, you know, some kind of conversation that was hard. And then I have people write down, what was important to you in that conversation? What was it that was important to you? And usually what we end up getting is a list of universal human needs. Occasionally somebody will say something like, well, I wanted my son to listen to me. And sometimes that's a euphemism for obey. And as we get, as we inquire, as we sort of peel the layers of the onion and go a little bit deeper, okay, so if your child did what you asked them to do, then what would you have? Then what would that give you? And in a particular situation, let's say it had to do with safety, so the parent gets to that, and so that's what we're getting at, is universal human needs, not a specific person performing a specific action. So when we can separate the needs and the strategies, we can find that for any set of needs that people have, we can actually get very creative about the possible strategies to fulfill those needs. I'm hopping ahead a little bit, but that's a little bit of the flavor of the metaphor of the giraffe, is it has this perspective that we can actually create outcomes of mutual benefit, that are mutually enriching. The metaphor of the jackal is, you know, this is a type of thinking and language that is less likely to result in our own needs being met, let alone in harmony with other people's needs. The metaphor of the jackal is that it's very, very low to the ground, and it kind of has blinders on, so it's only looking at its own needs, and it's wanting to satisfy them without regard to whether it does so in a way that's in harmony with the needs of others. So that's part of that metaphor. You know, where nonviolent communication comes from, and you'll hear me use the term NVC too, and nobody on this call is absolutely brand new, so you've probably heard these terms before. Where NVC comes from was, Marshall was a student of Carl Rogers, famous psychologist, and at that time, Carl Rogers was very interested in how is it that authentic human connection can be so healing? And sometimes the roles that we inhabit get in the way of authentic human connection. They can actually block the possibility of seeing each other human to human. So the roles parent-child, the roles husband-wife, the role teacher-student, the role therapist-patient, these roles can get in the way of authentic human connection. We start acting from a role, and we start seeing a role instead of a human being in front of us, and we start relating to the expectations of the roles rather than truly being authentic and real, and also compassionately open to hearing what's happening for this other human being. So Marshall set out to distill the essential elements in language that contribute to the quality of connection we're looking for. This question of quality of connection is at the core of NVC. Because the purpose of NVC is to create the quality of connection out of which we spontaneously enjoy contributing to one another's well-being. When there's a high quality of connection, we automatically tap into this spontaneous, natural generosity. I'll give you an example. If you've ever cooked dinner for someone and they really enjoyed what you made for them, press 2 on your phone keypad if you've had that experience. Yeah, pretty much everybody's had that experience. A few people maybe haven't pressed because maybe it's awkward, maybe you're driving while you're listening to this and it's awkward to press your phone keypad, that's fine. A very similar experience is if you've had a friend who really needed a favor and you gladly, naturally contributed to that friend and you did something for them. So in either of these situations, it's similar. We had a dinner guest and we fed them and they loved what we made for them, and it's incredibly fulfilling and satisfying. Similarly, if we have a friend in need and we help them out and they're very grateful, that's also very fulfilling. But as soon as that friend threatens us to help them, or our dinner guest threatens us to feed them, that natural generosity, that spontaneous joy of giving just goes out the window. It creates a short circuit for it. Or let's say that the dinner guest or the friend try to guilt trip us into feeding them or into helping them out. If you really cared, then you would do it for me. Pack your bags. We're going on a guilt trip. Same thing. That natural generosity goes out the window. It's no longer accessible. So it turns out that all over the world, in every culture, people are playing one of two games. One of those games is called who's right and who's wrong. And the other game is called how can I make life more wonderful? So it's this latter game. How can I make life more wonderful? You know, it turns out human beings love to contribute to one another's well-being. It's something that we absolutely enjoy doing fully, but it only works if we have choice. As soon as we experience ourselves as pressured, manipulated, coerced, forced in any way, it's no longer fun. We resist it. We don't want to do it. So that's why we focus on the quality of connection out of which natural generosity emerges spontaneously. Because think about the inverse or the converse. When you're really disconnected from somebody, like the slightest thing they do is highly annoying. The way they look, the way they dress, the way they walk, the way they breathe, it's extremely irritating. When we're very disconnected from somebody, the slightest thing they do is an irritant. So now go back to feeling very connected with someone. When the quality of connection is very high, that person could dent your car or they could spill an entire pot of coffee in the middle of your living room. And what happens? We become the most compassionate, most understanding person on the planet. You know, don't worry about it. Don't be so hard on yourself. You know, happens to the best of us. So when we can take any conflict and strip it down to the level of universal human needs, we start to see each other human to human, and it's easier to activate this natural compassion. And when we have a high quality of connection, reaching win-win outcomes is much, much easier. So again, the purpose of nonviolent communication is to create the quality of connection out of which we spontaneously enjoy contributing to one another's well-being. Let me break it down a little bit more, because there is a speaking side and there is a listening side. So on the speaking side, the purpose of nonviolent communication is how to speak my truth, how to share my perspective in a way that's most likely to elicit a compassionate response from the other person. It's most likely to be received with a compassionate understanding. And how to speak my truth in a way that's most likely to result in my own needs being met in a way that's in harmony with the needs of others around us. That's on the speaking side. On the listening side, it's how to be on the receiving end of what might otherwise come across as blame, judgment, criticism, some kind of verbal attack. How to be on the receiving end of this and be able to tune into the other person's needs and values. In other words, how to tune into their heart so that we're less defensive, we don't get bent out of shape, we're standing in a more compassionate place, and we're able to diffuse a misunderstanding or a conflict because we responded in a way that's different from what's habitual for so many people. Is when we hear blame, judgment, criticism, or a verbal attack, we take it personally or we get defensive, we can just write the other person off in our minds and say that person's a jerk and not want to connect with them, or we can shut down and withdraw, or we lash out. And that's part of the tragedy, isn't it? Is that when we're most in pain, when we most need others' understanding and compassion, it's when we tend to act in ways that make it least likely that we're going to get that love and compassion. Because when I'm in pain, right, the habitual response is to lash out or withdraw, so that makes it less likely that I'm going to get the compassionate understanding that I'm really needing and looking for in that moment. I'd like to talk briefly about the type of thinking and language that gets in the way of connection, that blocks connection. I'll just name a few components because we could spend 2 or 3 hours just going deeply into Jackal, and I don't. I want to spend at the most 10 minutes on this call. Diagnosing others, putting people in a box, criticizing, name-calling, that's one example of the kind of thinking and language that gets in the way of connection. But diagnosing can also be telling other people what they're feeling. So, for example, I can see you're very angry about that. Well, the other person might say, I'm not angry, I'm just feeling frustration. Or, the other day when you yelled at me for no reason whatsoever, right? For no reason whatsoever implies that I know what was happening inside you and that you had no reason to do what you did, whereas in reality you probably did. So that would be diagnosing, believing that we know what's happening inside the other person and taking our story a little bit seriously. Denial of responsibility is another one, of the type of thinking that gets in the way of connection, and it's any type of thinking that implies that we don't have choice. So, it hurts, Mommy, when you don't make your bed. That's a form of denial of responsibility. Instead of saying, why I value my child making their bed. What about that is important to me? Maybe it contributes to my needs for order and beauty. Or maybe there are certain things that I want my child to learn when they're living in a household with other people and making the bed is part of that. Maybe it aligns with my value around self-responsibility. But it, being able to say why it's important to me rather than it hurts me when you don't is a form of avoiding responsibility. Grown man to a four-year-old, don't make me hit you. Avoidance of responsibility. That little person can't make you do anything. A policeman stopping someone on the road, I have to give you a ticket. It's the law. Instead of saying why they're choosing to give a ticket, whether it's to keep their job or because they caught somebody going 60 in a 20 and they value safety, they're choosing to give a ticket. So like that, any type of thinking and language that implies that we don't have choice. There's also demands. One of the things that I love about nonviolent communication is that it's okay to want others to do whatever it is that we want them to do. But we take responsibility for that by making requests. I grew up in a very loving household where there was also a lot of confusion about how to motivate others. And the definition of love, at least some of the time, in the household in which I grew up was, if you love me, you would know what my needs are before I even know what they are. And you would contribute to my needs, how I want, when I want, and I shouldn't even have to ask, because if I have to ask, it's just not the same. In other words, our yardstick for how much other people care is the degree to which they are psychic. So you had to guess, always be guessing, how other people are feeling and what they're needing and what they want, what they're wanting. In nonviolent communication, we take responsibility for what we're wanting by issuing requests. However, in a true request, your needs also matter. Well, I can ask for what I want, and if it doesn't work for you, I'm willing to hear your needs, and we can negotiate something else that might work for both of us. However, from a life disconnected, life alienated perspective, also known as jackal, we don't make requests at all. We place demands on other people. And the deal with demands is that if you hear them from me often enough, you'll get the message that your needs don't matter. And in the long run, it'll be harder for my needs to matter to you as well. So placing demands on others and giving them the message that their needs don't matter equally to our own is a recipe for disconnection and resentment in any relationship. Then there's the concept of deserve, which is also known as justification of reward and punishment, and it's the idea that some people are good and some people are bad, and therefore we know who deserves to be rewarded and punished. So nonviolent communication, NVC, is a process language. It's dynamic. Jackal is a static language. So the verb to be is very important. We need to know who is what, especially who is good and who is bad. And then we know who deserves to be rewarded and punished. So these are all parts of the type of thinking and language that get in the way of the quality of connection we're looking for. And there's one more. It's a small list. I sent you a handout shortly before the class. It's in there. You don't need to look it up. I was having internet issues, otherwise I would have sent out that handout quite a bit sooner. But anyway, it went out about 15 minutes before the call, and it's optional, and it has more information in it. The handout has more information in it than we'll be covering in this class anyway, so it's there for you as a resource to look at in your own time. But there's a list of energies, and I'll just list them out for you. We can call them jackal motivations. And they are fear, guilt, shame, duty and obligation, to get a reward, to avoid punishment, or shoulds or have-tos. Fear, guilt, shame, duty and obligation, reward, punishment, shoulds, and have-tos. Anytime we do anything for each other out of these energies, the relationship will pay a price for it. So please, 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 please don't do anything for me motivated out of fear or guilt or shame, etc., shoulds, have-tos, that whole list. So when the mother of my children is doing the dishes, if she's resenting me out of the fact that she's doing the dishes, I would rather she not do the dishes. Because what's more important, the dishes or the relationship? If I'm vacuuming and I'm resenting her out of the fact that I'm vacuuming, she would rather I not vacuum. Because what's more important, the vacuuming or the relationship? So the dishes still get done, the vacuuming still gets done, when we're connected to how it contributes to life, when we're connected to how it's meeting the needs of the people involved. That's a very different energy. If I'm doing the dishes with this energy of, I have to, and if I don't do it, nobody else will, and I have no choice, I'm going to resent the task and probably other people, and I'm creating a lot of tension in my mind and body. But if I'm connected to how it contributes to my needs to do the dishes, maybe it aligns with my values around being a contributing member of the community that is my household. Maybe it contributes to my needs for health or hygiene or order. That's a very different energy to be doing something with than telling myself I have to or I should or I have no choice. So at this point, I'd like to pause and just check to see if anybody brought any specific situations. I'd like to lay out the NVC model and give you a very, very important key distinction. I'll do that first. There are actually three areas that NVC deals in, and in the handout that I sent out, there's a nice schematic of this page, and the pages are numbered. That would be page 10. It's the NVC Tree of Life created by Inbal Kashten. The three areas are basically the trunk and the roots of the tree are my self-connection. But then there's two other areas, which are expressing myself, authentic self-expression, or the listening side, which is empathic listening, listening with empathy, listening to understand deeply, not just what most people do, which is listening to respond. And so we have these three areas. When I teach at the intensives, the 9-day intensives put on by the Center for Nonviolent Communication, or at my own events like the 4-day mini intensive I have coming up at Whidbey Institute, October 12th through 16th, what I tell people is, you have these three areas, and you can be practicing the whole time you're here. Your attention can be in one of these three areas. So you can either be expressing yourself genuinely, or you can be listening empathically, or you can be connected with yourself and connected to what your feelings and needs are at any particular moment. So people are actually invited to be very intentional about where they're putting their attention at all moments during these intensives. The main two that we focus on in the model, when we're just laying out the model in an introductory workshop like this, is basically I talk about any communication process has two halves, giving and receiving, also known as speaking and listening. And in NVC, we call those honesty and empathy. So those are the two halves of the model. And under each of those halves, there are four components. Whether you look at it now or whether you look at it later, the four components of the model are in that handout on pages 15 and 16. One has the listening side and the other one has the speaking side, but it's the same four components. Observation, just a neutral statement of the facts. What could a video camera or an audio recorder pick up? Just the objective facts. That would be the observation piece. Second component would be feelings, and I'm going to use the word feelings and emotions synonymously here. Things like sadness or tiredness or frustration or irritation or confusion. But these are indicators. These are like a light going off on the dashboard of your car, alerting you to that something else is going on. And which brings us to the next component, which are the needs, which we already talked about. Universal human needs. These are the conditions necessary for life to thrive for any human being, regardless of geographic location or culture. Needs, the word is tricky because it implies a sense of lack, but we're not talking about that when we're talking about needs in nonviolent communication. And the word is tricky, so if you have to use a different word, that's fine. But I really want you to understand what we're talking about. I asked Marshall Rosenberg once to define needs for me during a break in a workshop, and he said, how life is seeking to show up in this moment. So when we're talking about communication that's connected to life, we're talking about communication that's connected to how life is showing up inside me or inside you, and we're using needs language, universal human needs. The thing to understand about needs is they are not a hole that wants to be filled. They're an energy that wants to flow. Needs are an energy that wants to flow, not a hole that wants to be filled. They are core human motivators. They're like flavors of life energy. So how life is showing up in this moment. That's the third element of the model. Observation, feeling, need. And the last we already touched on a little bit, which is request. Stating clearly what it is that I would like from others. So if I were to use the four components to express something in one sentence, it might sound something like this. When I notice that we scheduled our appointment for 2 p.m. and it's now 4 p.m., I feel some frustration because I really value my time. Would you be willing to tell me what it is that got in the way for you of getting here on time? That's an example of all four components. I said I value my time. That's taking it a bit less formal, making it a little more colloquial, because the purpose is connection. So if you picture the model of NVC with the two halves of honesty and empathy and then the four components, observation, feeling, need, request, a really important distinction to keep in mind is that the model itself is not NVC. The model itself is not nonviolent communication. This is very confusing to some people when they see me write it on the board, honesty and empathy, and then the four components, observation, feeling, need, request, and I say, this is the NVC model, but it's not NVC. Sometimes very confusing. And the reason is that what NVC is primarily, it's the consciousness and the intentionality that I bring to my interactions. So if my intention is to seek a high quality of connection out of which we'll enjoy contributing to one another's well-being, and I have the willingness to work toward a win-win, that's NVC. I don't care what words you use. I'm prioritizing the connection over a specific outcome and trust that a mutually enriching outcome will come out of that conversation. Because if my intention is to get my way, or if my intention is to manipulate a specific outcome, then I can use words that sound like observation, feeling, need, request, but it would not be NVC at all. Marshall called that a jackal dressed in giraffe clothing. So it comes down to the intention and the consciousness that I bring to my interactions. So that's NVC. So again, if my intention is to get my way, manipulate a certain outcome, then it's become a subtle way to manipulate other people and is not in alignment with what nonviolent communication truly is about. So again, if the intentionality and the consciousness is to create a high quality of connection, wow, then we're in a different reality. We're no longer playing the who's right and who's wrong game. We're playing the how can I make life more wonderful game. So I want to go back and say one more thing about, I talked about these energies, which we sometimes do things for each other out of fear, guilt, shame, duty and obligation, reward, punishment, shoulds, have-tos. There's one piece that if it's the only thing you get out of this workshop, out of this telecourse, if there's one thing you take away, maybe it would be this next piece, which is the energy with which we do anything for each other is just as important as the action itself. The energy with which we do anything for each other is just as important as the action itself. So I'd like to tell you a quick story of a time that I used nonviolent communication in real life, and then we'll open it up to Q&A and see what you have that you'd like to work with. I was near my house. I was putting gas in my car at the gas station, and a car pulled in and threw a lit cigarette in the direction of the gas pumps. My immediate reaction was I thought I had to duck and cover. I thought there was going to be an explosion. Nothing happened. But I was shaken, and I noticed that in my mind was the thought, what a freaking idiot. So I really was upset. I noticed my hands, my palms were sweaty, and my heart was pounding really fast. And I was able to take this judgment, what a freaking idiot, and get connected to what I was feeling and what I was needing. And I noticed that I was afraid because I had a need for safety. But I was also highly irritated because I really value self-awareness and self-responsibility. As soon as I got connected to those needs, safety, self-awareness, self-responsibility, my energy shifted. And I decided to go give the person feedback. Now, this was a big guy. I was definitely taking a risk. And I went up to him and I said, excuse me, but when I saw you throw your cigarette butt in the direction of the gas pumps, I felt really nervous because I really value my safety. Just then, a woman who was with him, she popped her head out from behind him. They were in line at the register. She popped her head out and she was like, what's he saying to you? And he turned around to her and he said, no, he's right. It's okay, he's right. And then he turned around to me and he goes, thank you. And I just want to break that down really quickly for you. The first thing that really, really helped in that situation was that I transformed my judgment. If I had gone up to this person to give him feedback with the judgment, what a freaking idiot, that would not have gone well. Because I would have gone up to him and gotten in his face and said, you know, what are you, stupid? You know, are you insane? Are you blind? Did you realize that totally stupid thing you just did? Instead, I transformed the judgment and I got connected with my feelings and my needs. But when this happened, I'd been doing NVC long enough, it really only took me a second or two. Didn't take any time. I just, boom, I connected. Because I've been doing this long enough, it happened that quickly. Then when I went to give him feedback, I started off, right off the bat, I said, excuse me, I feel nervous saying this, but here goes. The reason that that was so helpful is because, for a couple reasons, unexpressed emotions can come across as aggression, especially fear or nervousness. So if I'm afraid, I'm pretty intense. And if you don't know that I'm afraid, then it'd be really easy to interpret it as aggression. So just by saying, excuse me, I feel a little nervous saying this, I took the edge off the conversation. Plus, I was making myself vulnerable. Vulnerable not in the sense of weak, but in the sense of transparent, in the sense of real. So by being real, I invited his human compassion. So it's very disarming when somebody makes themselves vulnerable. It's hard to stay in sort of a jackal mindset. The second thing I did that really helped that conversation is I kept my observation clean. I didn't mix in evaluations, my interpretation, my analysis, when you stupidly threw your cigarette butt, when you mindlessly threw your cigarette butt. I had those judgments. I just knew it wouldn't serve to share them out loud. So those were, I'll just mention those. Those are three things I did that really contributed to that conversation flowing smoothly. And again, it was just these spontaneous things that happen in life. And when you have these skills, these tools, you can intervene or choose not to intervene, but you're coming from a place of self-connection, and your communication is so much more powerful and so much more clear than without these tools and skills. So I'd like to open it up to Q&A and just check in with you, see if you have any questions, comments, feedback. How has this been? I just want to be, and you can press 1 on your phone keypad if you have a comment or a question. I want to just express that, you know, we've been on the phone 45 minutes, and I've laid out a very simple introduction to NVC. When I do live intros, when I do intros in person, I like to take 6 hours. I like to make it more interactive, unpack some of the material a little bit more. And usually the all-day intro, the six-hour intro, looks like 3 hours before lunch and 3 hours after lunch. And part of what makes those intros particularly powerful is that, you know, people get the power of this material when they start to put it into practice, when they actually start implementing it and seeing what happens in their lives. I used to do these longer classes that were about 7 sessions, and there was a week in between each of the last 6 sessions. And that's a great opportunity to give people things to try and then come back a week later and debrief. You know, how did it go? What worked? What are you celebrating? Where did you feel like you got stuck? Where did you struggle? And we sort of debrief it and break it down and get more clear as far as developing skillfulness with the tools. Because having a tool is one thing, and being skillful with a tool is another. So, for example, that's why I have this 4-day retreat coming up at Whidbey Institute, is because it's a mini intensive. It's really giving people the opportunity to practice and to get feedback and to do role plays in a very, very supportive setting. So, Mary, hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. You're on the line.
Oh, great. Thank you. I'm really enjoying this. Thank you very much. And
where are you calling from, by the way?
I'm calling from Chilliwack in British Columbia. It's about an hour outside of Vancouver and about an hour north of Bellingham. So it's close to you guys.
Yeah.
Well, hi. Hi. This is great. My question is, when you were talking to the man in the gas station,
yeah,
you said that you did your self-connection first.
Yeah.
And then you observed and expressed your nervousness. But then later you said you prefaced it with the comment that you feel a bit nervous talking or saying anything. And so did you do both? Did you say you were nervous about talking to him and then say you felt nervous when he threw the cigarette?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the way my communication came out was, you know, I had to go inside the convenience store and he and the person he was with were already in the line. And so I was kind of interrupting whatever was going on, but I just went up to him and the first thing I said was, excuse me, I feel a little nervous saying this, but, and then I went on and I said, here's my observation, here's my feeling, here's my need. Now, when I said the feeling, I said, you know, when I saw you throw your lit cigarette but in the direction of the gas pumps, I felt really nervous because I really value my safety.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
what
I had actually felt was fear. But when I expressed it to him, I expressed it as nervousness because of the subculture out here and some assumptions I was making about this person's worldview, where I thought if I expressed fear, that could feed the disconnection rather than if I expressed it as intense nervousness, that would be easier for him to hear.
Yeah, I get that. And I really like, though, I'm taking it to heart, the way you introduced it, because for me, that's what Marshall talked about as preparing people for your weirdness. You know, just saying, I'm feeling a bit nervous about throat change. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to clarify that. Thanks.
Yeah. Was that your only question so far, Mary?
Yeah. I just find that when I try to speak to my daughter, you know, sometimes or other people, I have to learn how to prepare them a bit because she and others can kind of, not everyone, but just turn off right away.
Yeah. Well, there's a very, very, very important distinction between formal NVC and informal NVC, also known as street giraffe. So, if you're using the structure that you learn in a workshop, like When I see you take your car keys and walk toward the car, I feel upset because I have a need for it. Well, if you do it like that actually contributes to a disconnection.
Yeah.
And
It's hard.
we have to remember the purpose is not speaking NVC correctly. The purpose is getting to a high quality of connection. So after you've worked with the formal process, you can start to translate to make it like everyday speak, street giraffe. But the intention is there to create a connection. You're just using everyday language to do it.
Yeah, I just find it kind of like learning Chinese or something for me, so
I hear
I
you.
need the
I hear
constant
you.
practice.
Right. Right. Yeah, it does require practice. And there's three ingredients to be fluent in nonviolent communication. The first is interior clarity, connection with our own feelings and needs, knowing what's going on inside us. And the feelings and needs vocabulary is really helpful because otherwise we just don't have the language to bring what we're feeling in our bodies up into the conscious mind. The second ingredient we need is some form of support, whether it's a practice group or empathy buddies or an empathy honesty circle. It's really hard when we are in our jackal household and go to our jackal place of work and come back to our jackal household. It's very hard to make progress with the tools and skills. And then the third ingredient we need to be fluent in NVC is practice, practice, practice.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's great.
And it does become like second nature.
That's encouraging.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, because ultimately you don't want to have to think about it so hard. You want your attention to naturally go to feelings and needs and hearing
Yeah.
what's alive for other people and being able to make clear requests. And with practice, that really does become second nature.
Yeah, and one good thing is that I don't need two languages. Like, I can eventually abandon my first language.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mary.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Feedback? What did you not like? What could have made it better? Hi, Drew.
Hey, Alan, thanks for doing this.
You're welcome.
I have a question that I guess you just kind of touched on it when you said it's really hard when you go from your jackal household to your jackal work back to your jackal to find any kind of respite and a place to practice. So I guess I'm curious. I'm not going to be able to make your workshop, and I've wanted to do your workshop in an intensive way for quite some time. I'm wondering if you have a practice group in Bellingham.
I don't right now, but I'll tell you what, let's make it happen.
I would very much like that.
You have my email address, right?
I do.
Could you send me a reminder email and then we'll set up a time to talk and we'll take it from there?
I would love that. Yeah,
Yay.
great.
Cool. Thanks, Drew.
Yeah, thank you. I'll try to help gather people who I know also would like to practice this.
Great, yeah. Yeah, I'd love to go into the conversation and see what we can create.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Drew. Okay, we have another hand up here. Hi, Kiki.
Hey, how are you?
Great, good to hear your voice.
Good to hear yours too. I'm so enjoying this. I just wanted to give you feedback. I am writing down every single word you're saying because I'm about to teach an intro parenting course here on Orcas Island. And I really, I've never heard you teach before, and I just wanted to share that. I loved how you described the name NVC. In fact, it kind of moved me to tears. And the piece, I've always sort of talked about the ahimsa part, but the other word that you mentioned, I'd never heard before. So I wanted to share that was a big contribution to me. And also, I wanted to appreciate the pacing that you're using. I find it very contributing to clarity and understanding. So I just want to thank you so much.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. Yeah, the first time I had a chance to teach NVC was 1998, and I got in touch with one of my main mentors at the time, Lucy Liu, and I said, you think I'm ready? You think I'm ready? I was 27. And she said, yeah, you're ready. Just remember to teach it as a consciousness, not a technique.
Mm.
That really stuck with me.
Great, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kiki. Have fun with that.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you were here.
Thanks for having me.
So, any other questions or comments or situations? I'm about to, while we have 5 minutes left in the call, and while you're thinking whether or not you're going to press one on your phone keypad, I'll just mention that as soon as this is over, I'm driving to Bellingham and to work with a couple that I met through their lawyers. So I've been starting to, I did some workshops not long ago for the Whatcom Collaborative Law Group. And these are people who help couples do collaborative divorce. And while each person has their own attorney, the attorneys are working collaboratively, and they bring me on to the team as a divorce coach. So that's a really interesting process because we're not actually working to restore the relationship in a way. You know, we're not really, the goal isn't to bring these people back together because they've already decided to divorce. But what we do is some pretty intensive kind of like healing on the individual level. So I'll meet with one person and we'll role play. In fact, my role plays have various phases, so I'll actually switch roles. I'll role play the other person with compassionate listening, and then we'll switch and I'll role play the person that I'm working with. And they role play the other person, their difficult version, and I demonstrate other ways that they might handle these difficult-to-hear messages. So anyway, we do these like three-hour, pretty deep role plays individually, and then we get together, the three of us, and part of the purpose is to help them move through some of their own mourning, their own resentments, their own blockages, so that when they get to the negotiation process around dividing property or whatever it is, they're more connected to their own needs, and they're more connected, you know, like, oh, I really want to keep the house, but what needs of mine is that going to contribute to? And being really connected about, you know, what's going on for me, what's going on for the other person, and so it makes the whole resolution a lot more harmonious and more efficient, more time efficient, and the decisions they come up with, they're both on board with. And so there's more buy-in. So anyway, the solutions are more long-lasting, more sustainable. So that's where I'm headed right after this, is to go work with a couple. My bread and butter really is one-on-one coaching and mentoring, which I do over the phone or Skype. And I have three types of clients. About a third of them are communication skills coaching. About half of my clients are business coaching clients, actually, people who have seen what I'm doing as an entrepreneur in my own business and who want some coaching at that level. However, even my business coaching clients, I end up using quite a bit of NBC with. For example, today I had a client this morning who was really struggling with an inner conflict between his ideal lifestyle and these voices inside where he was telling himself he should live in a city and have an office, but his ideal lifestyle is he likes living in this small town near the beach. So we got to role play with the voice of the should and really kind of resolve this interior conflict that he was having. So, yeah, even with the business coaching clients, the NBC skills really come in handy when they're dealing with interior blocks and things like that. I'm not seeing any other hands come up. Any last comments or questions? You're invited to press 1 on your phone keypad. And I do have in the emails that you receive to sign up for this, I'm assuming everybody signed up via email. Some people might have signed up via Facebook. But I do have a downloadable home study course that gives you the whole curriculum pretty much with about 6 CDs worth of audio that were recorded in a series of live telecourses. And the workbook has worksheets at the end of each section, and it's really useful that way. And I have this 4-day mini-intensive coming up at Woodby Institute. Contact me if you want to sign up for that. Or just go ahead and register online directly. Since I'm not seeing any other hands come up, what I'd like to do is unmute all of us so we can say goodbye to each other. Okay, you're unmuted. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Alan. Appreciate it. I will talk with you.
Okay. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Alan. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Thank you, Alan. Gracias.
Gracias, Miriam.